This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It is often said that what we learn from history, we are doomed to repeat it because we don't learn from history. We don't learn from history, and those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Well, where does history start? Well, it starts with, for the most part, young people. It starts with young people, kids, that mature into the teenage years, that mature into early adulthood, that mature into middle age, and then the latter years of life. But it's the young people that generally have given life and a sense of vision and hope, oftentimes, to their culture and to the world. Either for good or bad, by the way. It might be hope for the good, or it might be, well, almost a hellish hope. So where is that rooted? Well, it's rooted in the heart, just like everything else. The heart of the matter is always the heart. So what is the heart of America's teenagers today? What is the heart of America's young people today? America's young people are generally defined as the millennial generation, generally up to age 40 or so, and down to maybe their late 20s. And then below that is Generation Z. Well, XYZ, Z is the last of the generations then, maybe, but that's where we are today. Generation Z. Would you believe that today on Viewpoint, we have a very vocal member of Generation Z joining us here on the program today. Generation Z. He says we're one generation away, basically, from losing our country. One generation away. He says now is the time to restore American freedom, but he said that hope is largely rooted in his generation, that is Generation Z. Well, a lot of people would say, you know what? I have a hard time seeing that. I have a hard time understanding it, looking at the trajectory of what's happening in our country. Well, today on Viewpoint, he has a different viewpoint. And as we say regularly, viewpoint determines destiny. So hopefully his viewpoint will be destiny determining for the future of our country. His name is Brylan Holliand, and he's joining us here today with his great hardbound book, the first book of his authorship at 18 years of age. Brylan Holliand joining us here from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. It's good to have you on the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation, and it's just great to be with Viewpoint today.
Well, you're still a senior in high school, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Now, I remember when I was 18 years of age, and I was on my way from a high school in the South, where I'd been for 1 year in Florida, and on my way to Southern California for college. And, you know, at that time, I, even though I had graduated number one or in the upper portion of my class, and A's were virtually the norm for me in high school, I have to admit, Brylan, that I did not have a clear direction of where I was going to go from there. I've gone through a lot of various aspects of life, including teaching public school, including practice law as a trial lawyer, and now 29 years on the air. So we don't necessarily know as young people exactly where we're going, but you seem to have a pretty clear idea of where you're going, at least at the present time. What's stirring in your heart right now?
Well, you know, there's a lot, actually. And it started very early on, like you mentioned, you know, from a kid wanting to do different things growing up. I've had a few career changes as well. When I was three, I wanted to be a police officer, and then my parents could buy me one of those little Halloween costumes to wear.
Okay.
And then around the age of 9 or 10, I decided I wanted to be a school teacher and made my parents buy this little blackboard to put in our room, and I would sit and draw chalk equations for my younger sister to do with math problems.
Uh-huh.
And then at the age of 11, I finally settled on politics, and it was quite
really?
A journey to get there. And at 11 years old, everyone around me said, oh, this is just another little phase that he's going to go through. And tomorrow he's going to want to be a safari explorer. He's going to want to be an astronaut. And it actually landed with politics, and it hasn't moved since then. So
isn't that fascinating?
it's fascinating. It really is. It's been really cool to see God, you know, work through that. And that was the 2016 presidential election. I was in the fourth grade. And that election cycle drew me in when it was really pushing a lot of people away from politics. A lot of people, you know, myself included, thought that that election cycle was far too divisive. And 8 years later, we've grown even more a divisive nation. But I got involved in that election cycle at 11 years old in the fourth grade because I wanted to bring unity to our nation. And I thought the next generation, Gen Z, like you mentioned, could be the generation to bring that conversation to the table of unity. We've been able to do that the past 7 years in my political involvement. And like you mentioned, there's a quite a few decades ahead for me, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, obviously, you're very, very eloquent, well-spoken.
Thank you.
And I recognize that and am very impressed by that. And I don't want to seem to be speaking down to you. No, I'm taking you on as, shall we say, a peer to communicate a message here to our country, and particularly to Christians in our country. This broadcast, this program is geared toward the Christian community. Probably 99% of those who listen are, and they're looking for hard-hitting communications. They're tired of playing games. They're tired of spiritual pablum. They want to get down to business, and they want it, their life to mean something for the kingdom of God. So where does the kingdom of God fit in your vision for politics?
Oh, it should be first and foremost my vision of politics. A lot of people constantly ask, you know, your political affiliation is Republican. And I say, well, yes, you know, I will be voting Republican in my first election cycle. And I guess 19 days from now, I am, you know, identifying as Republican. I work for the RNC, but my political affiliations deviate, you know, they come directly from my faith. That's where that ascends from. So before we, you know, say, take a stance on an issue or support a candidate from my perspective, first I just look at, you know, where they stand, you know, with the kingdom of God, what they're supporting and how that translates to, you know, the biblical perspective on things. And I put my faith before that. So before I support a party, you know, just blindly, I make sure that that faith goes before that. And that was a major, major, major aspect of, you know, my kind of my career coming up into politics. A lot of people looking at this like, oh, well, you know, this guy is just, you know, one of those, you know, Jesus criers who's out here, you know, screaming the gospel in every interview that he gets on national news. You know, this is really isn't appropriate. But I, you know, I think that we're here on this earth to glorify him. Every opportunity that we get to do that, I'm going to take that opportunity for. This isn't my platform. It's the platform that he's given me to use.
Amen.
To glorify him.
That is so wonderful.
That's, you know, kind of been a contentious point. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, when you use the term faith, you're talking about Christian faith, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Most all right. Because everybody's talking about the faith, people of faith, my faith, your faith, and it's so confusing. I don't know why people don't just say, I'm a Christian.
I'm proudly a Christian.
All right. There you go. So I have just qualified you as a quasi-expert witness here, like an attorney qualifying you on the stand to be able to testify before the people. And I think they are well prepared, understanding that you're prepared to speak on behalf of Generation Z. So hang in there, my friend. We'll be right back with you after this break, folks. The book, One Generation Away, to Generation Z. Be the hope of America. We'll be back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Today, our special guest, and I do mean very special, 18 years of age, has written a book called One Generation Away. His name is Brylan Holyhand, and I want to make the book available to you. It is a $32 book, yours for $27. It's on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. And quite frankly, you may think, well, that price is getting up there. Well, have you noticed the price of food these days? Yeah. Yes, the price of books is getting up there. This is a hardbound book. And can I suggest to you, friend, if you're listening to the program today, you might just want to get a copy of this book for your teenager. Anybody under, say, under 30 years of age, oh, yes, they will be inspired, and you will be, have made a tremendous mark. Oh, yes, you will. One generation away, friends. A $32 book, yours for $27 on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. Give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Chapter 5 of his fascinating book, well written. This book is written as well as any writer out there who is recognized. He has done a masterful job. Chapter 5 is called Faith, and he says this: the values that America was founded upon aren't just deteriorating, they're on the fast track to total extinction. The country that we live in today would be totally unrecognizable to our founders. Our modern-day media all but mock people for being a traditional marriage. College students are being instructed to hate their parents and their parents' values. Free speech is constantly under attack. Social media, virtual signaling is spiraling into bullying. Protesters are tearing up parks and looting stores, and the list goes on. Spiritual warfare is raging. And the majority of those who are involved in doing that happen to be millennials and Generation Z. So is it possible then that those that are involved in that kind of behavior could possibly become the hope of the future to turn America around? That, I believe, is the tenor of Brylin Hollihan's book, One Generation Away. Do I have that right, Brylin?
You absolutely do, Chuck. And before I answer that, let me just say that you need to be my publicist. I think you just did the best job of being a book salesman that I've had on this entire book tour, and I appreciate that, and it means a lot. Very, very kind words, and I just appreciate you taking the time to do that. I'll say specifically about those comments, they were a little contentious when I started writing that part of the book.
Right.
The first group that my team and I pitched this book idea to, I had gotten to the middle section of the book around what you were talking about, and the middle section is called the modern-day F-word, faith, family, and freedom.
Right.
And the publisher looked at us and said, oh, well, you just can't talk about faith in this book. We're not going to publish it. And I said, well, then I guess you're just not publishing it. And we moved on to the next group.
Good for
and
you, my friend.
Yeah, well, thank you. And in that conversation, you know, the team was kind of like, oh, well, you know, let's go back and see if we can get that group, you know, we can get some money for them. And I said, no. Faith, family, freedom is staying in the book. Why? Because faith, family, and freedom are the three cornerstones of American society. It's what the country was founded upon.
Exactly.
And the left understands that when they attack the cornerstone of America, they're crumbling it. So you just mentioned some examples of how faith, family, freedom are being attacked. We're seeing it every single day. People look out at this country and wonder why they don't have hope, wonder why it feels lost, wonder why. I mean, I was sitting on the back porch of my granny a week ago when I got to come home for a few days from the campaign trail. And my granny just turned to me and said, Brylin, I do not recognize the country that you're growing up in. And that's sad. That's unfortunate. But the only reason for that, Chuck, is because they've understood that attacking faith and freedom means they're attacking America as a whole.
That's exactly right. And you make an interesting statement that faith, family, and freedom are the modern day F words in America. They're the positive F words, that's for sure. You make a statement in this very same chapter that persecution is becoming a common practice in our country that was founded on religious freedom. What you did not know, Brylin, is that my 11th book just came out on September 1st called When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. Do you really believe that we're looking at persecution in this country?
I absolutely do, and I think we're seeing it every day. You mentioned a moment ago when you came back from break about spiritual warfare, and a lot of people said, oh, Brylin, you're a fear-monger, you're trying to, you know, instill this, you know, fear and hate in people so that they go buy a copy of the book, and it's no. What we're seeing directly is spiritual warfare every single day. The election that's coming up in 19 days isn't between Republicans and Democrats, it's between good and evil, and it's that simple when you boil down to it.
I believe you're absolutely right. I believe you're absolutely right, and it's not because of the perfection of either one of the presidential candidates. It's because of the positions that are taken and how they line up with the word, will, and the ways of God.
Absolutely. You know, persecution is kind of becoming common practice in the country, and that's terrifying. They're growing up in a nation like that, and you do not see a single D.C. bureaucrat calling that out. You don't see a single person, you know, saying, listen, this persecution has to stop, the First Amendment right, you know, gives us the opportunity to stand here as Christians boldly and proudly. Yet what we saw during COVID was government overreach and a taste of tyranny that we might get back if, you know, this election goes the wrong way. And we saw where we had members of opposing parties shut down churches for a year and a half to keep open strip clubs.
Right.
That is wrong. That is persecution. That is an attack on our fundamental rights as Christians. And that needs to be called out.
Well, I have a question for you, since we're talking about the subject of persecution for this limited amount of time. Do you sense any rising up in your generation or others beyond your generation, other than from a publisher? Do you sense any rising up against you for what you're standing for as a Christian?
I certainly sense two forms of rising up, one against me and one as the sort of revival that is going in the right direction of kind of this, you know, good movement towards, you know, people being baptized and coming towards God. I'll talk about the first thing first. What we've seen as we've done this campus tour the past, I guess, 6.5 weeks now, we talk about the book directly on college campuses because this book is for my peers. This book is to get the message out there to them.
Right.
When we share that with them, a lot of people say, oh, you're talking about faith, I'm going to leave now. And we said, no, you need to sit and listen. And if you still disagree with me at the end of the conversation, that's okay, but at least we have the conversation of planting the seed, a seed that can be watered later on down the road. Now, for positiveness, not so I'm just being labeled as a fearmonger here, there was a point in the book where I was in the writing process last fall, and I wrote a chapter about the need for revival in America. And a week or two later, we're still in the process of writing the book. I got to go and witness one of these revivals firsthand in Tuscaloosa as a campus organization came through the University of Alabama.
Really?
And I saw 152 students get baptized that night on the campus. And I said, this is just absolutely amazing. They went on to Auburn. They went on to Ole Miss. They've been on to Mississippi State. They're going to Georgetown next week. This organization's traveling. And I went back and edited that chapter before publication and said, there is a revival happening. Is it small? Sure. But those 152 people go to school the next day and tell their peers. And it spreads and spreads and spreads and spreads. You understand that, Chuck, and you understand that revival is needed right now in the country.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You say in your book that you were born and raised in a Southern Baptist family. The closest I came to being a Southern Baptist was living on a street where four Southern Baptist leaders had their families raising. And they asked me at 12 years of age to babysit their children. They took me to a Southern Baptist vacation Bible school one summer. And so that's the closest, other than having about five former Southern Baptist presidents of the convention here on this program. But you were raised in the Bible Belt of America. And one of the things that we're finding is that the Bible Belt of America gets a name because everybody goes to church, so to speak. Everybody goes to church. But do you know that the most difficult place that we have ever found to take this program was in the Bible Belt of America? We've had it in several different cities across the Bible Belt, and we couldn't keep the financial thing going, because it's as if everybody thinks they're, you know, they've got it made in the shade. I profess Christ as my Savior, and that's the end of the game.
Yeah, you know, I make a remark in the book that also got a little bit of criticism from, you know, my fellow Christian, where I referred to, you know, our denomination as holy huddlers, as these country club Christians who during COVID didn't make an effort to actually, you know, stand on their faith and make this example for others to kind of come join them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just kind of vented my frustration through there. You know, I like you mentioned, I did also make a little joke that turned some heads, that I said I had a drug problem growing up. I was drunk at church every Wednesday and Sunday. I grew up there, and it's kind of this culture that we need across America, but now it's looked down upon as somebody that's a regular church attendee. That wasn't the America that our founding fathers made. It would be unrecognizable today to our founding fathers.
Absolutely.
America. Those values are deteriorating day by day, and it's so sad.
Yes, absolutely right. There is a a name that has been very common over the past 30 years in the evangelical community. His name is George Barna. Are you familiar with that name?
Yes, sir.
Okay. George Barna has appeared many times on this program over the years, and I've quoted him in some of my books. And he, over the past, I'd say, 8 to 10 years, the results of his research are this, that among professing Christian young people, only 20% of them actually believe that Jesus Christ is the only way, the only truth, and the only life. Which means, by implication, that 80% of professing Christian young people do not believe that Jesus Christ is the only way, the only truth in life. In other words, they are religious pluralists. They're not really Christians. What say you?
I say that that is a possibility, because that's what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And when we try to counter that message, I reference a youth pastor of mine. Every Wednesday and every Sunday, he uses this phrase, even put on the back of our T-shirts for like youth camps and stuff, and it says Easter every day. And I remember some people that were guests at the church one time going like, "Oh, does your youth pastor just really like Easter bunnies and Easter baskets?" And I said, "No, that's not the point of his phrase. His phrase is to remind you that every single day you should be waking up with that feeling of gratitude that you feel on Easter." That Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, died on the cross for your sins so that you shall have eternal life. Every single day you should be realizing that specific action that he did that changed the eternity of the universe forever. And people kind of look at you like, "Oh, wow, that got deep really fast." And you're like, no, just that simple phrase is what you should remind yourself. That puts to rest any of this pluralist, you know, nonsense that's been put out there by the modern day worldview. It puts to rest any of these falsehoods that are being, you know, put into minds of my peers. When you remember that there is one God, there is, you know, one person that died on the cross for your sins and my sins, that kind of puts into perspective of why you should be grateful for that and not take it for granted.
Absolutely. All right. There is a word, and you mention it repeatedly in your book. It's one of those F words, freedom. And freedom is directly related to another word, the D word, that is referred to as democracy. So we hear our politicians, mostly on the Democrat side, but even on the Republican side, saying, "Our democracy, our democracy, our democracy." What we almost never hear is "our republic, our republic, our republic." One of the groups that has bought into the our democracy is the millennial and Generation Z group, because it markets well. It's "we get to rule. We're going to rule absolutely." And so it fits in with the spirit of rebellion that is often associated with young people. I get to do whatever I want, however I want, whenever I want, to whomever I want. That's democracy.
And that trend started, Chuck, as we mentioned in the very first part of the book, we give the context, during the hippie movement.
Yes, it did.
Started of this feeling of, you know, I can do what I want, what I want, and there's going to be zero repercussions. You know, let me be me and rule my life and rule the world.
Yep.
Unfortunately, those falsehoods started. And just like you said, there's been a trickle-down effect to my peers today. You're exactly right. You're spot on. You know, first of all, we don't live in a democracy. That's just not how America was set up. But democracy, the word, fits better in a bumper sticker than, say, a constitutional republic or something like that. And also, the other problem is that correct history is not being taught in the classrooms. Instead, we have activists spewing propaganda and spewing this indoctrination. And that's a problem when my peers don't even know what form of government they live in, vote in, and, you know, raise a family in.
All right. Have you been in the public school, private school, home school, or what?
I've done public for about 6 years of my life, and I've been in private school since then.
Private school. Okay. Is it private Christian school?
Just a normal private school. Unfortunately, if I have a private Christian on here, I would be in that.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you experience even in that context? Do you experience resistance among your peers? Are they shocked at some of the things that you say because you're rather bold? I want you to respond to that when we get back from this break, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. The book, friends, one generation away. I think you can see we're talking with a guy who knows what he's about. We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
What a terrific privilege it is to have Brylon Hollihan here today on our program, 18 years of age, when he wrote the book, and he's still 18. One generation away, why now is the time to restore American freedom? It's a $32 hardbound book, actually $33 hardbound book, and it's yours for $27 on our website, friends, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check adds $6 for postage and handling. And you know, again, I'm going to repeat, for those of you who did not hear me say this in the first part of the program, I believe that this book is the book that parents and grandparents have been waiting for. How do I speak to my young person, my child, my grandchildren? How do I do that? Because they don't want to listen to me. They want to listen to their peers. Well, here's a peer, 18 years of age, apparently has been respected sufficiently, not only for his speaking ability, but also his passion and his purpose and his ability to write and to communicate on things that will pierce the heart and help our young people understand where things really are and how they can be part of the difference. That's what I believe. This is a gift. This is a gift to America's parents and grandparents. Don't let this gift pass. Seize the moment. You've been whining and crying. What am I going to do? How am I going to deal with my kid? How am I going to deal with my daughter? How am I going to deal with my son? How? I don't understand them. They come back from college and they come back and they're saying all these things that are so contrary. Here's an answer, my friend. Here it is, right here on Viewpoint today. Our special guest, Brylon Hollihan. And Brian, the question was, what kind of response do you get, feedback do you get, even within your own educational experience in school, as you voice your thoughts, your opinions, and so on?
Yeah, I would say from peers my age, it's been really, really, really well received. A lot of friends of mine have, you know, stuck with me since I told you earlier, at the age of 11 in fourth grade when I started this journey. Everybody thought it was crazy, but they've, you know, been very willing to, you know, work with me and understand, you know, when I'm gone on the trail and when we're traveling for speeches and that type of stuff, and when we're there. You know, you have the occasional people that disagree. I've still got people that refuse to sit by me at the lunch table, but guess what? That's okay, because we're fighting for the greater good and fighting, you know, for the future of this country and the future of the kingdom, which is far more important than having a buddy at lunch. So, you know, what I will also tell you is, you know, kind of how this whole journey came about with specifically my peers. So this time about last year, we were in the process of writing the book, but I hadn't come up with a name yet. I told my team, we'll come up with a name towards the end of the publication process.
Right.
And I was doing a speaking tour out of state most of the week. And I had a friend of mine, she's a kindergarten teacher. She texted me and she said, hey, is there any way next time you're in state, you could come and speak to my daughter's Girl Scout troop? They need help getting the Brownies and Democracy badge. And I said, you know what? That'd be a lot of fun. I'd be more than happy to do it. Let's make it happen. So next time I was in state, in the next week or two, we came to Tuscaloosa, came home and did the speech to a Girl Scout troop. And I'm giving, you know, a speech about importance of, you know, going with your parents and grandparents to vote on Election Day and, you know, kind of explaining them what a democracy is, explaining what a constitutional republic is, and going through all these different facets to a kindergarten group. We're trying to, you know, kind of keep it pretty simple. And at the very end, I close the speech the same way I close every speech, whether it's at Harvard last week or it was with this Girl Scout troop. The famous Reagan quote, freedom is one generation away from extinction. Close the speech, didn't think a single thing of it. Little girl front row, remind you, Chuck, he's a kindergartner, said, oh, one question. Does that mean freedom's going to go extinct like the dinosaurs? And I froze for a moment, and I said, you know what? You're actually right. Just like that, at the snap of a finger, freedom can go extinct like the dinosaurs.
Wouldn't you say that that's right on the line with regard to this upcoming presidential election?
It most certainly is. And this kid needs to be a Fox News host or something, because he was just right on the money. He was very smart. And you could tell he kind of thought about it, like, I don't want to get made fun of, but, you know, what's the answer? And I said, no, you're actually really right. I haven't heard it been put in those terms before. And so I left that conversation with that kindergarten class and called my agent and said, we're going to have to call the book One Generation Away. And, you know, it was really cool to see that happen from a kindergartner.
Great, great name. And, of course, it engenders a whole lot of ideas. How could this possibly be Generation Z, not looked upon with a whole lot of mercy these days, or even grace? here's something that is very troubling about both Millennial and Generation Z, and that is that not only do professing Christians not believe, the majority of them do not believe that Jesus Christ is the only way, the only truth, and the only life, but they also have grown up in a situation where my generation, we'll call it the baby boomer generation. I'm from the greatest generation. I'm the last year of the great generation. So there's no pride involved with that. I just absorb myself with the baby boomer generation. So the baby boomer, and then you have the baby buster generation. And those two generations are renowned for their marriage breakups, renowned for moving in the divorce direction, renowned for the sexual revolution, renowned for coming out of the rebellion of the 1960s. So here you have the millennial generation, Generation Z, your generation, that are scared spitless about getting married. And so they call it the failure to launch. They're just afraid to get out there because look what happened with my parents and my grandparents. What say you?
You're spot on, Chuck, and it's so sad looking out at the country. People not, like you said, wanting to launch into that phase of life, wanting to actually go and get married and start a family and glorify the Lord through that, you know, phase. Because, like we mentioned previously, it's previous generations, a failure on their part of, you know, starting this trend that divorce is okay, of starting this trend that, you know, the nuclear family isn't the end-all be-all, that that's not something that we should support. Supporting this idea of, oh, we'll seed a little ground here. It's okay. We'll seed a little bit more ground here. It's okay. We'll seed a little bit more ground here when it comes to these, you know, societal norms that used to not be normal. And now we look at and, you know, this is the world today. It's so sad and it's so disheartening. And it really goes to pop culture today, mm-hmm, of normalizing this type of stuff. You know, I make a reference in the book that, you know, if my generation didn't keep up with the Kardashians so much, maybe we would be a better off today. And so people said, oh, well, you can't attack somebody that's got, you know, hundreds of millions of followers. And I said, but that's the problem. They have hundreds of millions of followers. And now we're seeing, you know, divorce rates skyrocket.
And Jesus has very few followers. Okay, that's true. And I'm thinking, as you're talking here, about a song that did not come out of your generation. It came out of the, I believe, the baby boomer generation. I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction, but I tried and I tried and I tried. Would that be descriptive, Generation Z?
It absolutely would be descriptive. You know, we learned in Sunday school that we one day would be faced with the world, and one day the worldview would want us to fill this hole in our hearts with things of the world. But Chuck, as you know, and all the believers listening to this program know, that's a God-shaped hole that only God can fill.
That's
Unfortunately,
true.
A lot of my peers have not understood that yet, and I've tried to fill that hole with things of the world and normalize those things of the world as things that can you know, bring you that satisfaction. We see depression rates skyrocketing. We see suicide rates skyrocketing. People look and say, what in the world is the problem? Why is everybody so upset? It's because my peers are trying to fill that God-shaped hole with things of the world instead of God.
So what is freedom for? Is it freedom from or freedom to?
I think it's freedom from.
Freedom from what?
Freedom from this position that the government's tried to put us in of tyranny.
Yeah.
Freedom from, you know, what we saw during COVID. Freedom from, you know, what could happen if they encroach on, you know, say, your Second Amendment right or even your First Amendment right as we're talking about spiritual warfare. I think it's the protection, a set of amendments that is giving you freedom from what could be, because our founding fathers saw how bad that could get overseas in England in that time period.
And that freedom from then is for the purpose of leading us to a freedom to do that which God would have us to do. Because if the freedoms are removed, then it makes it very, very difficult indeed to communicate the gospel, difficult to communicate the restoration of a God-fearing people. So it's both and, isn't it?
It's exactly right. And it, you know, it's a full circle that a lot of people are too afraid to talk about it. So it's a thing where people go, oh, well, you know, freedom's freedom. But there's a major difference between the two. I think it's important to, you know, talk about the distinction there. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
All right. I'm going to give you another song coming out of the 1950s and 60s. He's a real nowhere man, living in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have the points of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you and me? The Beatles. The Beatles.
Oh, there you go.
He's a real nowhere man. If that didn't speak to the generation then, it certainly speaks to the generation now. So the question that I have is, how do we move from where things are within the millennial and particularly Generation Z, your generation, how do we move from being a real nowhere man, knowing not where we're going to becoming a generation that restores hope for America?
I think
how's that for a question?
It's a great question. I think it starts with these hard conversations. You know, a lot of people are too afraid to be willing to sit down at the table and have a conversation. Unfortunately, you know, we started this whole program off by talking about, you know, my peers and the precedent they've set in my generation are kind of this bad rap or leaving a bad taste in your mouth when you think about Gen Z. And that's because, you know, they refer to Christians and conservatives as a silent majority when you're talking about a voting bloc. I think, you know, my loud peers in Gen Z are the loud minority. You've got people that have dyed their hair blue and grabbed a bullhorn and shut it on a campus, and they're not willing to have the conversation that you're bringing up there.
All right. We're going to talk more about this when we get back. 12 minutes to go, friends. Coming down the home stretch with our Generation Z, Brylan Hollihan. One generation away. You got to get this book, my friends. You have to get his book. You do. For your own self-defense and your family. We'll be back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
For those of you who wanted to attend the breakfast that we're holding up there in Massachusetts on November 2nd, we've extended the time through Friday to make your reservation. Do it today. Don't delay. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Medicine. Well, don't do the writing because that's going to take too long. Go to the website, saveus.org, saveus.org, and sign up there, or give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. November 2nd, Saturday morning, 8 a.m. to 11:30. You don't want to miss it, friends. This is real life among people who care like you do. You're going to enjoy that fellowship. You're going to hear from both me and my wife, and all of our books and materials are going to be there, and there are going to be some pretty special offers for you. Don't miss it. All right, back with our special guest here today, Bryland Hollihan. And Bryland, I have here in the book, you have a chapter called Hard Conversations and the Path Forward. You say that for too long, Republicans have walked the tightrope on topics significant to young people. Then you say, if the GOP wants to be relevant with millennials and Generation Z, we have to be open to discussing hot topics pertinent to young voters. We have to initiate the hard conversations with kindness and confidence. And you say, yes, I'm talking about life, election integrity, climate change, other social issues. Are they all moral issues? Have they been politicized in some way that really isn't making them truly political, but they're actually something else? How do we do that? That is the tough order of the day, my friend. What's your insight?
You know, I think you're right. I think a lot of these political issues that are debated upon today amongst my peers in Gen Z are fundamentally moral issues that just got politicized because they were trendy with a hashtag or filling a bumper sticker.
Are you communicating that fact to those that you're speaking to?
I most certainly am.
Good for you.
I was with President Trump last night, and I told him we had this exact same conversation that you and I are having right now. What I told him is that the Republican Party is very clearly on the right side of history, but we have a messaging problem. For far too long, we have had a stance. So, you know, we use abortion, for example, and say that we are pro-life, but we say it into the microphone and then we run away. We do not explain, you know, why we are pro-life. We don't explain why abortion is murder, give the science behind it. We just say it and run the other direction when we press upon it. You know, Mike Pence is a really close friend of mine. Mike Pence is somebody that obviously a lot of people politically disagree with,
right.
But he's somebody I had a dinner with when I was in the process of writing this book. Him and I were both writing our books at the same time. And we sat down and we talked and we sparred on some political topics because I disagree with the former vice president on some things. But what we can come together on is our proud pro-life stance and our Christian faith.
Right.
And we're having this conversation, and Mike Pence very simply put it, he kind of grabbed the piece of paper that was in front of me and said, Bryland, you've got to put this in the book. Just say that you're pro-life and proud of it. Simply say that you're pro-life and proud of it. And I said, well, why does nobody ever use that? Why does everybody say I'm pro-life and I run away, and I'm pro-life when it's convenient for me to debate, or I'm pro-life when I can win this people group, but I'm not actually explaining why I'm pro-life in every single step of every walk of life?
Uh-huh.
And he said, because they try to politicize a moral
issue. Exactly. Exactly. That's the real issue. And then they come back, and pastors are intimidated to talk about the real issues of our time because they've been told that's political. No, it's been made political, but from a pastor's viewpoint, it's spiritual, out of which the morals come. And so that's what I try to communicate here on this program, and you have articulated it well, and I'm so glad that you have seen through the smokescreen of that's political.
Yeah, and it's super important to understand that this is something that, just like you said, pastors should be advocating against as well, that, abortion is something that pastors should be leading the charge on, not running away from. It's a moral issue, not a political issue. It's just been politicized because it can be, banned through a voting cycle. I think that's disheartening. I think that, thou shalt not kill is very clearly a Ten Commandment. So it's one of those things that we should treat as such, not as something that I will, let this politician run on.
Why do you think that 40% of, or about 40 million professing Christians are not registered to vote?
You know, I did an entire podcast episode on this for my podcast last week, and I left that conversation. It was about 34 minutes. I left that conversation so incredibly disheartened, because in that cycle, we presented a whole bunch of numbers. And one of those statistics that you just read was one of those. And I do not understand why Christians don't, first of all, want to register to vote, and second of all, don't want to get out and vote on Election Day. The only thing I've heard from people when I question them on it, when they come up after a speech and say, oh, I agree with you, we've got to save the country, I'm just going to not vote. And I say, well, why not? And they say, politics is too dirty. Politics is just too messy for me to get involved in. That is so incredibly disheartening. Christians should be leading the charge vocally and boldly on the front line, saying what is happening in our country is wrong. Spiritual warfare is wrong, and we need to put an end to it, and we need to vote and use our voice to do so. At no point in the Bible does it say stay away from politics. God's very clear in the Bible about electing, whether it's kings very early on or later on emperors or rulers. He's very clear about the importance of Christians and voting and government and forming that whole structure. The United States is a country that, you know, very clearly had God's hand in the process of making, and the founding fathers, who, you know, several became presidents, very clearly had God's hand on their shoulders, and they were writing this thing to protect religious freedom in the country that was, you know, invented for that.
Right. Well, John Jay, our first Supreme Court justice, said that we should prefer Christians to fulfill our elective offices.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
I think that's something that we've gone away from.
Okay, so here's what a lot of people are saying. Christians, they're saying, you know what? I don't like either one of the candidates for president. I don't like their attitude, or I don't like their personality, or I don't like this, or I don't like that. So there are things about both of them I don't like, therefore I'm not going to vote. What do you say?
Chuck, let me tell you this. Donald Trump is a personal friend of mine and has been for years. I sat down and talked to him privately last night for an extended amount of time. And I will say that Donald Trump is not somebody that I would elect to be the pastor of my church. But I will elect him to be my president, because in this election, we're choosing a president and not a pastor. Mm. I think that when we look at this cycle, you need to put his policies over his personality. I don't love the guy's personality. That's actually what our meeting was about, of how he can, you know, start saying stuff differently, big message to Gen Z. I don't love the way he says things. I don't love the way he posts stuff. But guess what? I do love his policies. I would love to have $1.40 gas again. I would love to be able to go on road trips with my friends in my senior year of high school. I would love not to have to wake up every morning frightened that I'm going to be drafted to serve on the front lines. Because as you mentioned, I'm 18, and that's exciting and wonderful for a book, and it's exciting to be a senior in high school. But also being 18 means you're drafting aged. And that means that I could go serve on the front lines of the proxy war the current administration is threatening to get us in. I would love to be able to go to sleep at night, not having to fear that fear of endless wars continuing on and me being a casualty of that. I very simply put it like that when I had young people and old people look at me and say, I just think it's too messy. Both candidates are bad. Well, pinch your nose and vote politics over personality.
Well, we were told by an English poet, hope lies eternal in the human breast. So where's the hope here? Do you see real hope with Generation Z, or is it just wish fulfillment?
It's most certainly actual real hope. I mentioned earlier, you know, from a faith standpoint, what we're seeing with these revivals breaking out across college campuses.
Uh-huh.
But what I simply tell my peers, anytime, you know, when I'm getting towards the end of a speech, they start raising their hand and they say, oh, what you said is great. You've lived out the American dream at 18 years old. That's so cool. But it's just not possible for us. There's just no hope in the future of America. And I said, but listen, that's where you're wrong. I have put my hope in Jesus Christ alone, not in a single D.C. bureaucrat. And if every single one of my peers leads that revival of believing in that, of believing in a hope in Jesus and not in D.C. bureaucrats, we're not only winning the White House, taking back the Senate, and keeping the House. We're going to start a revival across the country, Chuck, and that's what we need so.
That's what we really need, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, it was Randy Tate and Don Hodell, congressmen, who were chosen by Pat Robertson to head the Christian Coalition after the original leader went to Texas to head up his political group. And they made a statement that I have never forgotten. They said, if we were to fill every elective office in the United States with Christians of the ilk that we currently have today, America would still not change. They said America will only change when the hearts of the people change. What do you say?
I believe that's spot on. And I believe that the hearts of the people need to start changing. And that comes from, like we mentioned in the previous segment, those hard conversations of talking to people. I was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin about a month ago with President Trump. We did his convention. It was a lot of fun. It was a really surreal experience being in the room. Uh-huh. And every night he had a different theme for his convention. One night was Make America Powerful Again, Make America Wealthy Again, Make America Stronger Again. Great stuff. What the theme needed to be was Make America Talk Again. When Americans start talking to each other instead of screaming at each other, we will start changing the hearts and minds of people, and then you can open up that door for a faith conversation to spread the gospel. That's what we need so desperately, and unfortunately, like I mentioned, Christians are afraid to talk. Christians are afraid to have those hard conversations. Until we have those hard conversations, we're not going to see any change.
Well, if they're afraid to talk now, they're going to be even more afraid as persecution comes on them as a total insult and assault against them as freedoms are lost. Therein lies the problem. I believe your last chapter for such a time as this, I'm thinking of Wayne Watson. He had a song based upon the book of Esther. For such a time as this, I'm placed upon the earth to do the master's will, whatever it is. And I believe that's you, my friend. I believe I sense that sense of calling, a sense of calling, a sense of purpose, a sense of preparation. God, by his Spirit, has prepared you with the kind of gifts that are necessary to be able to speak articulately with love, with care, but also with power and conviction. And that's what you're doing. And I want to encourage you in that regard. Keep pressing on the upward way. New heights you'll be gaining every day. Till pressing as you're onward bound, praying, Lord, plant my feet and that of my generation on higher ground. So that's my final word to you, Brylan, and I'm so delighted that you and I have been able to meet here. I give you a holy hug over the airwaves here. Just so glad that we've been able to connect. With your permission, I'm going to send you a copy of my latest book because I think you're going to want it. You're going to need it for the rest of the work that you're doing. So if you'll stay on after the program, I would sure appreciate it. Friends, the book is One Generation Away. Why Now is the Time to Restore American Freedom. A $33 book, yours for $27. It's a hardbound book. This is hot off the press, friends. This is a message for the hour, and it's a message for your kids, your teenagers, Generation Z, millennial generation. These are the ones that Christian parents are having a very hard time with because they're coming back from high school and college, university, even their Christian colleges, and they're challenging mom and dad and grandparents. Yeah, I don't agree with that. I don't do this. I don't do that. This is the way it really is, and you're frustrated. You don't know how to deal with it. Well, here's a young man, 18 years of age. God has given him a voice of elocution and wisdom and perception and understanding, and he can speak through this book to your young people. One Generation Away, $27 on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Save USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. Write a check, add $6 for postage and handling. And please, friends, consider becoming a partner. You see, we don't do commercial support here because to do so makes us subordinate to the whim of those who support. No, we trust God. We trust God, and he trusts you. So if you're moved by this program, if this program is edifying, strengthening, encouraging, maybe even convicting you, then how about coming on board and become a partner? Go to the website, saveus.org. Make your generous gift that way. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us. God bless, and pray for the future of our country.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.